In this podcast episode, Tabata sets, listener questions about running faster, dropping fat faster, treating foot pain, using indoor cycling to get faster for bike racing, what to do if you panic in a triathlon wetsuit, getting ready for a century ride on a bike, and how to eat before a surgery.
Welcome to the Ben Greenfield Fitness.com podcast. We provide you with free exercise, nutrition, weight loss, triathlon, and wellness advice from the top fitness experts in the nation. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you're just trying to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill, cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Hey, podcast listeners, this is Ben Greenfield, and this podcast is actually getting released a day late. I'm sorry. I've actually been teaching a triathlon camp the past 4 days, and, you know, if you want to see what I've been up to, what I'll do is I'll put a video of that camp in the show notes to this podcast so you can see some of the cool and crazy things we've been doing, and you can access this podcast show notes at episode number 95. At BenGreenfieldFitness.com. Now, in addition to that triathlon camp that was going on this past week, I've also been quite busy with another podcast over at the Quick and Dirty Tips Network. If you go to iTunes, I am the Get Fit Guy. And if you do a search for Get Fit Guy on iTunes, then you'll find my new very short podcast, especially compared to this one, but it is really designed to help you become fitter, and the title of the podcast is Quick and Dirty Tips for Shaping Up and Slimming Down. So there you have it. In today's episode, I'm going to be giving you a very cool tool that I've found for doing something called a Tabata set, and I'll tell you about both the Tabata set and the tool, and I'm also going to be answering a bunch of listener questions. We don't actually have a featured interview for this week, but for those of you who liked the interview last week with Jill, the marathon training coach, then I should tell you that that package, that Marathon Dominator package, actually gets released the evening that I'm recording this episode. As a matter of fact, in about 8 hours, that Marathon Dominator package is going to be released. So you can go grab that at marathondominator.com if you are a marathoner or mildly interested in running 26.2 miles. So normally at this time we have special announcements, but you know, I just basically covered all the special announcements in the introduction to the podcast. So we're going to go ahead and have a quick message and then move on to this week's featured topic on Tabata sets.
Get the inside edge from Ben Greenfield Fitness delivered straight to your phone. Just text the word fitness to 411247 and you'll instantly get exclusive VIP discounts and insider tips that no one else will ever see except you. Do it now. Text the word fitness to 411247 and you'll be in Ben's VIP text club for free.
Featured topic.
So we're starting off by talking about Tabata sets. Some of you might know what Tabata sets are, but let me explain real briefly. When you have a short period of time to work out, or you want to try and get a lot of results without working out for a long time, a Tabata set is a good way to go because it takes about 4 minutes to do. Now, that doesn't include the warm-up and the cool-down, but basically you are doing a lot of work in 4 minutes during a Tabata set. The way that it works is you choose an exercise, and the exercise could be bicycling, it could be the elliptical trainer, it could be push-ups, it could be sit-ups, it could be squats, whatever. And you do 20 seconds of that exercise as hard as you can go. And again, like I said, you do need to warm up prior to doing this, but once you're warmed up, you start into that 20 seconds as hard as you can go. And then you take 10 seconds nice and easy. And then you move on, you do another 20-second set, same exercise, as hard as you can go. And one of the common mistakes I see people make with a Tabata set is they don't really go as hard as they can go. They go at, you know, 80% or so, but really do go as hard as possible. And you continue doing 20 seconds hard, 10 seconds easy for 4 minutes. So it's essentially about eight sets, eight 20-second sets with 10-second rests between each set. And it works with any exercise. I find it to be particularly effective with plyometric exercises like jumps or jump rope, as well as cycling or elliptical type of exercises. Now, there has been quite a bit of research done on Tabata sets, and specifically the fact that you can get superior endurance adaptations when you do them, aerobic training adaptations. So when you do a Tabata set, you can get a lot of the same things going on in your body as you would have occurring when you go out on, say, a 1 hour run, but you're not working out for quite as long, so it's quick and convenient. And there's more information about Tabata sets in an article that I wrote that I'm going to link to in podcast number 95 in the show notes. But the other thing about Tabata sets is that it can be tough to be watching the clock when you're doing them. As you're huffing and puffing and dying during your 10 seconds rest, sometimes it gets difficult to look at your watch to see if you got to 20 seconds yet, if you have your 10 seconds of rest, especially when you're doing things where it's hard to look at your wrist, like push-ups, cycling, anything where looking down and being focused on your hand and the 20-second mark is just logistically kind of difficult to do. So what I am using now is something called a Gym Boss. And the Gym Boss is basically something you can program for any type of intervals, whether they be 20-second intervals or minute-long intervals or whatever the case may be. But then you can program a certain number of those intervals to complete. So I can program the Gym Boss to give me 8 sets of 20 seconds with 10 seconds off between each 20-second set, and I can program it to beep or vibrate or whatever I want it to do when both the work period start and the rest period start. So ultimately, it's basically like a fancy stopwatch that is in charge of your Tabata sets or any interval training sets. And since it's in charge of those, maybe that's why they called it the Gym Boss. Anyways, I shot a video of me programming it for a Tabata set, showing you what buttons you would need to push to get the Gym Boss ready for a Tabata set. They're fairly inexpensive. I'll put a couple of links to them in the show notes to the Gym Boss so you can check it out and order one to do with your Tabata sets. But I'd really recommend that you try it out and that you utilize it in your Tabata sets. I know this sounds like a shameless commercial for Gym Boss, but I have a lot of clients that I have doing Tabata sets right now, and it's working out really well to actually have a good way to time the intervals. So I definitely check it out. So that being said, I know, fairly short featured topic. Don't worry, I've got a ton of really good interviews coming down the pipeline. But with that short featured topic, we're going to move on to this week's listener Q&A.
Listener Q&A.
So remember, if you have a question, you can email me, ben@bengreenfieldfitness.com. You can send me a voicemail by calling toll-free to 877-209-9439. Or if you're international and you want to use Skype, my Skype name is Pacific Fit. And any of those methods would work. I'll actually be playing a few voicemails I received this week towards the end of the listener Q&A. And of course, as usual, I'll be giving away a free membership to my Body Transformation Club to the best question of the week. So the first question this week is from listener Rick. And Rick says, my mom is going to have surgery in a couple of weeks. Should she be changing her diet in pre-surgery for a faster recovery? Any dietary tips would be appreciated. Well, surgery can be pretty difficult on the body. Not only are infections and blood loss some of the things that you got to worry about, but you need good nutritional elements in your body to repair your skin and your nerves and your blood vessels, your muscle and your bone. A lot of things happen to your body during surgery. I actually, when I first graduated from college, was a surgical salesman, and I would go in and attend knee and hip surgeries and basically watch and kind of show the attending medical practitioners how to use some of the tools that we had to make the surgery a little bit more efficient. But, you know, I was able to witness the enormous stress that surgery places on the human body. And so there's a lot of things that happen. And in terms of some of the vitamins and minerals that your mom would want to make sure that she actually has in her body, some of the things that come to mind would be making sure that she's got some good vitamin B12, which is important for nerve system function. And, you know, she can get vitamin B12 along with some good vitamin B6 and iron sources by consuming red meat. You know, like she could do salmon, lean beef, buffalo, bison, anything like that. About 6 to 8 ounces a day for those last couple weeks going into surgery would be something that she'd want to do. I wouldn't necessarily advise her, unless she is already a vegetarian or vegan, to cut out animal sources going into surgery. So the entire B complex actually is pretty important. Vitamin C is really important for collagen formation, and I would up the vitamin C intake. Of course, you can do that through fruits and vegetables. There are also, you know, generic vitamin C type of supplements out there as well. Vitamin A is really important for immune system function, and I would make sure that she's got some form of vitamin A coming into her system as well. I'm not a doctor, but right now the recommended dose in terms of international units for vitamin A is about 2,500, and usually up to about 5,000 is just fine. And you can get those from a lot of the same sources that you would get beta carotene from, you know, for example, yams, sweet potatoes, or carrots, or you could supplement with a vitamin A source. Now, a lot of antioxidant, or not antioxidant, but oxidant damage occurs to the tissues, both during and after surgery. Vitamin E is a really powerful antioxidant, and so I would look into getting on a vitamin E supplement as well. Vitamin D is also really important for recovery. A lot of people, especially older individuals, are deficient in vitamin D. And so I would suggest that you look into vitamin D supplementation as well. One other supplement that I've had just about every one of my athletes who has had to go in for surgery take leading into the surgery are proteolytic enzymes. And there's been quite a bit of research done on these proteolytic enzymes, and especially their ability to help you bounce back a little bit quicker after surgery. For example, there was one surgery done on the removal of the torn meniscus from the knee joints, and they had a placebo group and a group that was taking the proteolytic enzymes, and the placebo group required 24 days for recovery and for the swelling to subside from surgery, and the group that was taking the proteolytic enzymes only took about 17 days. And so this enzyme treatment has a really beneficial effect on your post-surgery recovery time. Now, what I would recommend is something, you know, and this is why I recommend, is most of my athletes are taking this already just for their day-to-day recovery from their workouts. And generally, I recommend that they double up their doses if they have to go in for a surgery. But it's something called Recoveries, and it's proteolytic enzymes, it's branched chain amino acids, and they're really good for workout recovery, but also for preparing your body to recover more quickly from the rigors of surgery. And again, I always have to put in my disclaimer here. I'm not a doctor. I'm definitely not a surgeon. And this is not intended to be medical advice, but that is just my basic advice. And that's what I would do if I were going into surgery. I would basically be taking my recoveries, and I would be doubling up on it. So I'll put a link to the recoveries in the show notes for you. And we're going to move on to a quick and short question from listener Glenn. And listener Glenn says, what can I do to improve my running speed? Intervals, Glenn, intervals. I actually just recently had this question over on one of my Facebook pages, somebody who is preparing for a 2-mile running event. And what I told them was to start off with a couple of weeks where they do quarter mile efforts and do 8 quarter mile efforts with about a 2-to-1 work to rest ratio. And you do that for about 2 to 3 weeks, and then you move on to half-mile intervals. And so you can do 4 half-mile intervals for another couple of weeks, and then you do 1-mile intervals for a couple of weeks, and then you move on to your 2-mile run test. And with each of these intervals, the general rule for work-to-rest ratios is about a 2-to-1 work-to-rest ratio, meaning that you are resting for about half as long as it takes you to run that half mile or quarter mile or full mile repeat. So I'd really recommend, if you're not doing interval training, that you include that. And then the other thing that's super important is hill training. Hill sprints not only build up a lot of strength in your legs, but they reduce the injury risk that comes with doing flat sprints. And so hill sprints, we're talking like a set of 10, 20 to 60 second sprints up a hill. You will automatically find that you get fast when you do that, especially if you allow yourself to recover for about 48 hours after that hill sprint effort, meaning that you're not going to go out and do a hard run the next day. And you would preferably put off for a couple of days going out on another really focused running session. But intervals and hill repeats are what I would highly recommend, Glenn. And good question. The next question comes from listener Cherie. And Cherie says, I have 30 days before my first 100-mile run. Wow, Cherie. That's awesome. That is a feat that I find very intimidating, and you have my respect for going out and running 100 miles. But you say, I'd like to drop some unwanted fat. My workload is high right now, so my dietary needs are high. Is it still possible to drop some fat? Well, obviously you need to be careful, because any time that you're at a caloric deficit and you're doing a 100-mile training regimen, you risk a little bit of cannibalization of lean muscle mass. Now, one of the things that I can recommend to you, and that I'll do sometimes when I'm not eating very much, trying to cut fat, trying to cut weight, but not wanting to lose a lot of lean muscle, is I'll take amino acids. And, you know I mentioned the branched chain amino acids earlier in this podcast. I'm talking about a full amino acid profile. Like, you can get amino acid fibers. Amino acid powders. I've talked about something called a master amino pattern before. That's one thing that you could go Google on the show. It's abbreviated MAP. Another one that's really good that I take now is put out by a company called Bioletics, and it's called basically just amino acid powder. And you could go look into the Bioletics amino acid powder as well, and just tell them you heard about the powder on this podcast, and they'll definitely take care of you over there. But the amino acid powder is something that would allow you to still do your training sessions, be at a caloric deficit, still burn fat, but not risk really just churning through a ton of your lean muscle, which you don't want to lose. And of course, when you're at a caloric deficit, you can also risk essentially eating into or cannibalizing other forms of muscle, including your heart tissue. So you want to be careful being in a caloric deficit and doing 100-mile run training. So try and, if you do a caloric deficit, try and include some form of amino acids in your program. So the next question is from listener JD. JD says, Hi Ben, one of my training partners has this nagging pain through the arch in his foot and Achilles heel. He recently mentioned he tore his Achilles 20 years ago when he wrestled in high school. So I've suggested some yoga poses for stretching and using a golf ball or frozen bottle water to massage the foot. He's the kind of guy who's resistant to seeing a doctor, but it's been going on now for a couple of months. Are there any stretches, exercises, or recovery tools that you could suggest? Well, you're on the right track doing some mobility exercises in terms of some of those yoga poses, like the downward dog pose. You're on the right track mobilizing some of the muscles of the foot. I would not neglect the muscles of the lower Achilles and the calf, which you could easily hit with a stick like a muscle track or a foam roller. Either of those would be quite useful, and I generally go into that type of mobilization 2 to 3 times a day. The other things that you can do in terms of topical anti-inflammatories or topical treatments to improve blood flow to that area is you could use a muscle warming cream. These are pretty common among cyclists who train in cold weather, and it's usually essential oils mixed with something like cayenne to improve blood flow to the area. That's something you could use. A topical magnesium would also be something that you could use around the foot and the calf area, again, to improve circulation and improve mobility. It's also an anti-inflammatory. So those two treatments in terms of topical anti-inflammatories. Another couple of good ones are Arnica, and one that you can find at most grocery stores called Traumel, T-R-A-U-M-E-E-L, would also be useful. So you're on the right track, but I would include in his program some foam roller, some topical anti-inflammatories like magnesium and Tramiel, and then also make sure that you're warming up that muscle really well, especially if you're going out and running and doing things like that. You can warm it up by doing the bicycle. You can warm it up by doing some lunges and squats before you head out, but try not to run cold on that muscle, especially if he has very immobile and inelastic scar tissue that he's retained from this injury 20 years ago from wrestling in high school. You know, he's always going to be fighting that, but some of those methods you can use to at least improve his chances. So, listener Roy asks, I'm a part-time indoor cycling instructor with a full-time job. Because my time at home has now increased exponentially in value, I am focusing in this season's triathlon training on increasing training intensity as a path to help decrease my volume. Cycling is the most time-consuming of the triathlon disciplines, and while catching up on back episodes of the Indoor Cycling Instructor podcast, I heard you as a guest on the show talking about how you trained using several indoor rides per week with one outdoor ride weekly. Would you mind sharing some tips on the protocol you followed to be able to cut back on outdoor riding and still be able to compete on the bike in a race? Well, I used to be one of those indoor cycling instructor Nazi spin instructors that would bark out orders to groups of people cycling and basically dole out lots of punishment and lots of calorie burning and lots of fitness to people while they sat on those bikes. And of course, since I was doing that, my time was limited as well. I did it in college. I did it for a few years as a personal trainer, and I had to rely on those sessions for my own fitness as well much of the time. And I was into triathlon at that point, and I was actually a fairly strong cyclist in triathlons relative to other people in my age group, but I was really only getting on a bicycle outside once per week. Everything else was indoors on the spin bikes. One of the really important things that I did was make sure that I adjusted my tension so that it really did reflect the type of tension I would experience outdoors. When you have a spin bike with a 40-pound flywheel, which is what a lot of them have, that is essentially maintaining momentum for you, you have to be really careful that you choose a resistance that's fairly heavy. I would typically structure our weekly classes so that we had a one class that focused on VO2 max, so we were doing lots of 30 up to a maximum of 2 minute very intense sprints. Sometimes we'd even do microbursts of 10 seconds on, 10 seconds off, or 15 seconds on, 15 seconds off, sometimes implementing the Tabata sets that I talked about earlier in this episode, but one spin class was always focused on short, powerful VO2 style efforts. And then we'd do another class during the week that was really focused on lactate production, on longer 5 to 10 minute efforts, longer hill climbs, basically efforts that did not get the heart rate quite as high as the VO2 max days, but did have you hold a slightly lower intensity for a longer period of time. And similar to what I was telling listener, was it Glenn? I think it was listener Glenn about running faster. We'd use about a 2-to-1 work to rest ratio during those sets. And then my third and final training session of the week was an outdoor training ride, and that was just my long day. That's where I would go out and I'd ride for anywhere from an hour up to 2.5 hours, just basically outdoors and primarily aerobically. So the VO2 max set combined with the lactate training session combined with the endurance ride was how I used indoor cycling and minimal outdoor cycling to get fit. And of course, the other thing that I would do is if I were unable to ride outdoors, I would just shift that outdoor aerobic ride onto the indoor trainer and then shorten it up, because the nice thing about the indoor trainer is you're not stopping at stop signs and stoplights and slowing up and getting lots of pauses in your training. And so you can get away with a little bit shorter period of time. I generally, if I'm going to ride indoors, ride for about 75% of the time I'd normally be spending riding outdoors. So, good question. Listener Kathy asked, I joined your body transformation club and am a participant in the summer body challenge. I've been cycling 2 or 3 times a week, spending about an hour on the bike, totaling 50 or 60 miles. I registered for a century ride. I figured it will help me stay motivated in the summer body challenge and will help me lean out. I just turned 50 this year and need to step it up. My last big ride was the LA Fun Ride, which was 64 miles. Before that, I did the Sea Otter Grand Fondo, which was 50 miles. My questions are, if I keep my calorie intake low, will I still have energy to train? How many miles a week should I be in the saddle? And should I focus on specific muscle groups while doing my strength training? I think I already answered your first question, Kathy. If you keep your calorie intake low, you're still going to have energy to train, but you risk depleting muscle mass. So I would make sure that you have some type of good quality whole protein source or whole amino acid source in your diet if you are going to keep your calorie intake low. I would also recommend that you not keep your calorie intake low necessarily during your training, but you engage in your caloric restriction outside of training. So, for example, you could do a limited breakfast, a small snack in the mid-morning, small lunch, and then eat before an afternoon training session and immediately after an afternoon training session, and then a smaller dinner rather than doing the training session starved. Now, there are some times, and I do this myself, that I do train starved, and when I do that, I'm actually purposefully trying to cannibalize lean muscle just to lighten myself up for a race. Unfortunately, most people don't have enough lean muscle to start with. As an ex-bodybuilder, I have enough to go around, but especially with females, I find that usually cannibalizing lean muscle is not a good way to go for them, and doing the unfed training sessions, unless it's a real, real short or easy training session in the morning, is not a good way to go. So I would do your caloric restriction outside of the training session and then fuel yourself during your bike ride so that you can maintain intensity and burn a lot of calories and get a good fitness response. And then you ask, how many miles a week should I be in the saddle? You definitely don't have to go out and ride 100 miles before your century ride, but I would recommend, similar to what I was telling Roy, that you have an intense session, that you have a tempo or a hill-based session, and that those two sessions be slightly shorter. For example, those would only need to be 15, 20 miles long. And then on the weekend, throw in a session and gradually build up to 80 miles in an endurance training session on the weekend, and you can easily train for a century with right around that 100 to 140 mile per week range and be just fine, as long as you're doing some tempo and some intervals. If you're doing only aerobic training, you're going to have to do more mileage than that, and that's why aerobic training is kind of subpar for really getting good results, or purely aerobic training. And then your third question is, should I focus on specific muscle groups while doing my strength training? Absolutely. Some of the muscle groups that you want to focus on would be the outside of your hips and your core. A really good exercise for cyclists is anything in the front plank or the side plank position. A really good exercise for the sides of the hips would be lateral lunges. Fire hydrants are really good. Hip hikes are really good. Side leg kicks are really good. A lot of the type of exercises in the foundation section of my book, Run With No Pain, just because when I wrote that book, a lot of those exercises were the reason that cycling or not doing a lot of those exercises were the reason that a lot of cyclists and runners were getting low back pain. So a lot of those exercises would be the same ones that I use in my book at runwithnopain.com. And the other specific muscle groups that I would be focusing on are the ones that are getting neglected when you're cycling, such as overhead shoulder presses, pull-ups, some of the upper body exercises. Cyclists tend to have low bone density, and so by doing load-bearing exercises, you're fighting off some of that low bone density that could happen if all you're doing is cycling. But I'd definitely be doing core and hip-based exercises, as well as upper body pushing and pulling exercises as some of your primary muscle groups that you train. Now, the next question comes from listener Cheryl, and Cheryl says, I did my first triathlon in 1993 and never had any problems with the swim. I didn't do it anymore until 2006, and I've been doing 5 to 6 triathlons every season since. My problem is that I often panic in the swim, and it seems to be worse when I wear my long-sleeve wetsuit. I always seem to get a little panicky, but sometimes it gets so bad I have to stop and hold on to the kayaks because I feel like I can't breathe. It feels like I'm having an asthma attack, and sometimes my chest hurts after the race is over. Any advice you have for me would be greatly appreciated. Well, Cheryl, I had the same thing happen to me for my first few races, and then I discovered that I was putting my wetsuit on improperly. It wasn't a sizing issue. I followed the sizing recommendations on the wetsuit manufacturer's website, and I even spoke with a rep, with a wetsuit rep, and they informed me that I did indeed have the correct size. So let's assume that your wetsuit is sized correctly, The problem was that I was pulling the sleeves of my wetsuit all the way down my arms and the legs of my wetsuit all the way down my legs and not leaving enough rubber in my chest to have the slack that I needed to breathe. So pull the wetsuit a good 2 inches up above your wrist and about 3 to 4 inches up above your ankle, and then continue to pull and tug on that wetsuit until all that slack comes up into the butt from the legs and up into the shoulders from the arms, and then grab at your chest and kind of tug that wetsuit away from your chest, kind of opening up your chest a little bit, and then do the same thing again when you get into the water, because what it sounds like is that you're just not giving enough of the wetsuit to your upper body, specifically your chest and back area. So when you're wearing that long sleeve wetsuit especially, make sure that you pull all the sleeves and the legs of that wetsuit up, and then ensure that you pull that extra slack into the chest and the shoulders and the upper abdominal area, and I have a pretty strong feeling that you're going to notice a pretty big difference. I know I did. So, you know, that's all the write-in questions this week. I do have some voicemails that people left this week, and I'd like you, if you're able to, stick around and listen to some of these voicemails, especially if you are a triathlete.
Hey, Ben, this is Patrick from just outside of Nashville, Tennessee, one of your triathlon dominators, calling to give you an update. I just finished the 6-week racing block that's featured in your plan. I raced 2 sprints, an Olympic, and a half iron in a span of 6 weeks, and my results were a little bit overwhelming. I PR'd in all 4 of my events. Finished on the podium in 3 of them. My half Ironman, which was last weekend, my previous PR was set at 70.3 New Orleans, which the bike course has 1 hill and the run course has 0. I broke that PR at a race whose course advertises how hilly their bike and the run course is, and the swim ended up being about 500 meters too long. So, and I did all of that with feeling that my body recovers well, feeling that I'm faster, stronger, and I never finish a workout feeling like I wasted my time. I just wanted to say thanks for all of your guidance, your answers, and I look forward to dominating Ironman Louisville.
Hey, Ben, this is Todd Houston calling from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I'm one of the guys that's doing your Triathlon Dominator program, and I just wanted to give you a bit of an update. Up here in Canada, I'm a little bit late doing my half marathon race, but it hasn't been warm until about now. Did my half marathon just last weekend up over in Vancouver, which I think lots of people in the States know now of because of the Olympics. Great day for racing, 10 degrees and raining, but wanted to let you know, had some great success there. I managed to beat my best time in the half marathon by, wait for it, 18 minutes. It was pretty huge accomplishment for me. I have run the half marathon in just under two hours, and I was able to run it in under 145, which was my goal, and actually ran in 142 and change. So felt great the whole way. Nutrition worked amazing. So my biggest problem now is I don't know what's the biggest contributor. Is it the training plan? Is it my nutrition, considering I'm 20 pounds lighter than when I started this the plan? Or is it just in general feeling good? So I want to thank you for all your help so far, and I'm looking forward to my block of sprinting Olympic distance races and my half Ironman coming up here over the next 5 or 6 weeks. Recovery's been great after the race, and I'm back to running and feeling great. So thanks so much, and I'll keep you posted on how my early season races go before Ironman. Thanks very much. Bye.
Hey, Coach Ben, this is Brett from Cedar City. I was just calling to give a report about how my Ironman race went. I've completed the Ironman St. George course on May 1st. After completing the Tri-Dominator program. Just wanted to give you a little bit of feedback. I felt like I really had a strong base showing up on race day. Felt very well prepared, fresh legs. It was just a good day altogether. The nutrition, again, spot on. I just exactly what I did on the half Ironman, just doubled it and felt like it was really confident, no cramping, no GI distress, no problems at all, no very little fatigue. It just had a really good race day for me. I just wanted and just give you kudos and shout out that the program works. It got me completed through the marathon. I felt really well and strong, and my recovery's been very, very quick. I actually got to go run a little 10K the next week after the race, and so quick rebound, great program, man. Highly recommend to anyone that's looking to complete an Ironman and still stay married and have a good balance of life and work and everything else. And like I said, I felt just as confident showing up on race day than anyone else. So thanks again, Coach, and hope to work with you soon. Bye.
Well, thanks for calling in, you guys. Obviously fantastic to hear the success, and you know, it being the fact that I released the Triathlon Dominator last year, and myself and just a few of my coached athletes were the only people who had really done a lot of the components of that program, I was pretty anxious to see people get to the race season this year and start to experience the benefits of the program. And it's pretty cool to see things materializing and all these athletes doing well at their races. So that program is at triathlondominator.com, and of course the Marathon Dominator comes out tonight at marathondominator.com, and it's really based on a lot of the similar training and nutrition philosophies. So until next time, this is Ben Greenfield reminding you to go to iTunes and leave this podcast a ranking. And also, if you get a chance and you want to ask a question, email me, ben@bengreenfieldfitness.com. Call 877-209-9439 or Skype Pacific Fit. And of course, you can access everything that I talked about over at bengreenfieldfitness.com. And this is podcast number 95.